Hi, this is Betsy Foldes-Myman for ConnectiPod. With our series Changing the Narrative, we podcast with youth in communities that get a bad rap. We examine the existing dominant narrative about that community, and we explore what's right, what's wrong, and what's just plain missing. Then we go about creating a more accurate and complex narrative with the youth that we're working with. No one is a single story, right? And that's especially true of the TAE. TAE stands for Transitional Aged Youth. They're the homeless youth, or formerly homeless youth, that utilize the services of the drop-in center at the Village Family Services in North Hollywood. For Season 3, Unhoused Youth, Stories of the TAE. The TAE... that term. The TAE. That's an organizational term that they use at the DIC, and at first I thought that was so weird, you know? But now I really dig it. Like it's like a band or a tribe. This group of people bound together by hardship, and they find their way through the same path of the DIC. Separate stories that share a common thread that unraveled in different ways. In our first interview, you met Gail Alvarez, who spiraled with undiagnosed mental illness. Then you met Lupe Cerda, who is in recovery from addiction, brought on by trauma and grief. Today, you're going to meet Daniel Estrada. He and his six siblings were taken from his parents for extreme neglect and abuse, and then the siblings were separated. Daniel then spent the next 10 years living in 10 different places through the foster care system. What the TAE all have in common is a childhood deferred, dealing with difficult issues, and just plain survival. Just when they're supposed to be as teens and young adults, figuring out who they are in life, what they want. But instead, they just have to think about how to meet their daily needs. We're going to meet each TAE in their own interview to learn their story, what led them to homelessness, where they are in their journey to stability, and where they want to go. The second part of our program is to pair each TAE with a professional media mentor via Zoom to help them create their own episode of their own content and own vision, because the TAE are more than just homeless. That's their situation, not who they are, not what they dream about. In this interview, you're also going to hear Alejandro Soria, the director of the DIC and counselor extraordinaire. We're so thankful to have him guiding us through this journey, helping us to understand and navigate the trauma of the youth that we are working with, but also just kind of so we're not jerks, you know, so we don't trample on feelings that we don't even know that we're trampling on. And to be honest, just to entertain us along the way, because he's really entertaining. I was just recently at the DIC in our studio booth there to record Gail Alvarez in her solo episode. So I corralled her to help me introduce Daniel. Hi, I'm Betsy Foldes-Myman, and this is Changing the Narrative. And this is Season 3, Stories of the TAE. And here I have, again, with me, Gail Alvarez.
Hello.
We just finished recording her episode, which I'm very, very excited about. Yay. But she's here to also help me introduce Daniel, Daniel Estrada. So what can we say about Daniel?
Daniel is, when I first met him, he was very shy, but as he lingered around the drop-in center, he opened up and he makes me laugh a lot, I can say that. I think he's a, I don't know what to say. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I was just telling Gail that what was really interesting in the interview with Daniel is that you can feel his energy receding. It's almost like he wants to make himself invisible in that spotlight because he doesn't like the spotlight. But the minute he's interested and engaged in an idea, his whole energy moves forward. And it's really kind of interesting to see because he doesn't move physically, but you can see his energy going backward and forward. He's really, really interesting in such a deep intelligence that you can see
right
with him, you know?
Yeah.
And it's almost like that when he makes himself invisible like that, and he talked about being on the street and just watching people, and I can just see that. Like, it's almost like he shuts himself off and becomes this camera almost.
And then he just, when he talks about what he likes, he's very passionate and bright.
Yeah. So, all right. So, I guess we'll hear.
Okay.
Hello, I'm Daniel Estrada.
How old are you?
I am 22.
You're not old enough to forget yet. That doesn't happen until your 50s, right?
Yeah. I don't like celebrating my birthday.
No?
So it's like, I don't really make a big deal about it.
Why don't you like celebrating your birthday?
I don't like attention.
Always been.
Yeah.
Same thing.
All right. So let's start with, like, when people think of homelessness, what do they think of?
Skid Row.
Skid Row?
Yeah. I don't know. People living in tents under bridges. I don't know.
And that's...
People on drugs. Laziness, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
And you don't seem like that at all, that stereotype?
No.
What's your experience with homelessness?
Well, for me, it's like it was hard, but it wasn't that different because I was raised in the foster care system as well. I always felt like kind of like alone or like kind of like fighting for myself, kind of a thing. Because I did have times where like I had bad placements or like they were like mistreating. So then, but eventually I got adopted. And then I had a fallout with them, and then I became homeless.
How many foster homes do you remember being placed in? And from what age to what age?
I remember not age, but school. So whenever I like talk about anything, it's more like I don't remember my age. I mostly remember like what I was doing in school, because school was my escape, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to say, I don't know, at least 7 houses and 2-3 group homes.
Wow.
But then...
About 10 altogether.
Yeah.
How old were you when you were adopted?
17. A lesbian couple. They live in Claremont. They're great. But then I felt like they were too invasive in my life. I felt like they were trying to, like, control what I was supposed to do. And I... From going to something that I'm, like, completely independent to... living with them and them being helicoptering me, it wasn't a good mix. So I decided to leave and basically just went into the streets. At first, I was living in a park in Whittier. The first couple of nights, I couldn't sleep at all. So, like, I was, like, exhausted. I wasn't eating, no shower or anything, no type of anything. I would go to a Starbucks to, like, you know, charge my phone. Eventually, I moved in with my cousin. Eventually, her mother pretty much was like, oh, you gotta, like, pay rent. And I started giving her, like, whatever money I could, like, get. And then it wasn't enough for her. So then she said, you gotta go. Because before I was homeless, I was going to Cal Poly Pomona.
You were going to Cal Poly?
Yeah. So I had made, like, connections there, like, friends. We were in, like, there was a foster care program there. They called them cohorts, I guess, which is, like, basically the group of people that you went into the program with. So we got really close. I was there for, like, a year and a half, maybe less. So then, basically, I was like, oh, I asked one of my friends from there, so, like, oh, do you think I could, like, just, like, crash for a little bit? She's like, yeah. And then, for me, it's, like, I felt really uncomfortable asking that. But I had to, you know, in order to, like, survive, I guess. Yeah.
And she gave you a place to stay?
Yeah, for a little bit. And then eventually my grandma was living in, I think they call it South LA now. And eventually I decided to leave because I was like, I'm not. Because for me, it's like I kind of feel like I got to contribute something. And when I can, it's like I feel like, you know, like a moocher.
Mm.
I don't know, just, like, I guess it's a personal thing. But eventually I went, like, contacted people, emailed people, and then somebody got back to me that there was, like, a spot open at the Way In, which is in Hollywood as well.
It's, like, it's a shelter?
Yeah, it's the Way In, the Salvation Army. I was there for, like, 43 days before they found me the housing here at the Village.
So you've been all over L.A. then. So yeah. From foster care, did you stay in one area or were you always in different areas?
I was born in Long Beach. Before foster care, I was living in Compton, like in the project. But there was one point where I did go to like Hesperia, like Victorville area, Altadena, Pasadena, Whittier was another one.
So you were
or were there other brothers and sisters?
Brothers, I have 6 siblings.
Oh, you have 6 siblings?
Yes.
Were you placed together or no?
Originally I was placed with only one brother. But then, you know, like we were young, didn't want to be taken from our families. So like we were acting up and like destroying stuff. Mm-hmm. So a lot of, they ended up separating us. Then eventually we got reunified like in a group home. I don't know why. And then from that group home, my brother was living in a foster home in Whittier, and he asked the foster parents if she could take us in, and she said okay. So we started to like have like little visits to see what it was going to be like, and eventually me and my brother got to move in. So for a while, me and my two brothers were living in a home, and eventually she had room for like my other siblings, so like she brought in I think three of my other siblings, so there was like six of us living there at once.
Wow. Okay. So you obviously have had a very traumatic past, and so if I ask questions that you feel like you don't want to answer, you can say I don't feel like it, right? Because I don't want to reopen old wounds. Okay. So with your parents, did you have both parents, and was it neglect or was it abuse?
It was my mother and my stepdad. It was neglect and abuse. It was both.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Wow, and so six kids, and where are you in the lineup?
Fifth.
Me too. So then you've been all over, you've been with all different people. Are you still in touch with your brothers and sisters?
Yes.
You are?
Yeah.
Yeah, and how are they doing?
Not too good. I think at the moment, I mean, they're stable. I think two of them finished high school. The rest of them didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they all have pretty much, I think it's me and my youngest that are the only ones without kids.
Wow, and you made it all the way to Cal Poly, so that's pretty good. That's not an easy school to get into.
Yeah, it was fun while it lasted, but then I couldn't. I had to go.
sorry, you kind of caught me off guard. All right, so now you're housed, right? You have a place to stay, and you're going back to school. You're going to Valley College, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how are you feeling now?
I'm feeling good because I think next month sometime, my grandma asked me to move in with her. And my sister lives with her. I have only one full siblings. The other ones are step siblings, I guess.
Half.
Yeah, half siblings. Yeah.
I don't know. Me and her are like really close because we're full siblings, and like we like, you know. But it was me and her like from the get go. Even like when before we were in foster care, our stepdad would like pick on us the most because of our father. But. She lives with my grandma right now and she just had a baby. I'm excited for that.
To go and be an uncle?
Yeah.
So is your grandma in South Central still?
No, right now she's living in Beaumont, but she's gonna, I think she's moving to Moreno Valley.
How's that going to affect your schooling?
Well, my goal is to eventually transfer to UC, and UC Riverside is in Moreno Valley. So
oh, yeah, that's perfect, right?
Yeah, I just have to look into community colleges. But the good thing about Valley is that the rest of the school year it will be online, so I could finish the school year at Valley and then like, you know, at the end of the year transfer some like
good goals though.
How did you find out about the drop-in center? How did you end up getting referred into housing?
The shelter.
The way-in.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they were a DMH shelter, a Department of Mental Health shelter. Every, I think it was Tuesdays and Thursdays, they would have workers from Department of Mental Health, and they would come to talk one-on-one with the youth that were in the shelter and talked about, like, more stable housing, because that was just kind of like a rest stop. I think the maximum you were allowed to stay there was, like a month, but I went a little over because they were kind of, like, working out where I was going to go, and then eventually they brought me to the drop-in center. Basically, just they took me to the Burbank house, and yeah.
Wow, that's a long road. So.
And how long have you been at the Burbank?
I think almost 2 years. I think I got there in 2018, October 2018.
Uh-huh.
And that's rent free, right? Like they help you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so are you working as well right now?
No, I can't.
Yeah.
I gotta focus on school. I've tried working in school, and I tend to focus on working more than school, and that's. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been there. So that's a lot to unpack. So you've had trauma for a really long time, right?
But in therapy.
Yeah? Are you in therapy?
Mm-hmm.
Is that helping?
Well, I was, I've been in therapy all my life, but it was more of like, you know, I guess I kind of saw it as like a survival therapy because I went like high school, it was, that I decided to like forego therapy. And that's when I just like started to crumble, you know, at the edges at first, and then eventually just shattered, which led to like my homelessness, I think. Just my mental health, I feel, was like a big part of it. Since I've been at the house, I've been in therapy and it's been good.
I mean, God, it's totally understandable, right? The weight of all of that and ending up where you did on the streets, right? Did what gave you what changed it? What gave you the courage to change it?
I don't know.
Or like, what was the turning point?
I guess like when I go see my siblings, how they struggle. I don't want to be like that. I always knew that I didn't. I wanted to go to school like beyond high school, but I didn't know what that looked like. I didn't have anybody to like really ask about it. So when I got to high school and all that, and I got adopted, that's when I like. Before that, I wasn't really sure if I was going to go to college. When I got adopted, my parents were like, well, they both have their professional's degree, so they know about school and all that. They basically just said, oh, these are the options. You can either work, go to school full-time, either or. You can do part-time of both. Basically, they were kind of like, yeah, if you can major in whatever you want, stuff like that.
Are you still in touch with your parents?
At first I wasn't, but now I'm kind of like rekindling, like, I guess, a relationship with them. It's been going good. What was the issue with them and me? It was the lack of communication, I think. And now I feel like I can like communicate better with them, like just like how I'm feeling, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
because like that was one of my biggest issues, being able to communicate how I'm feeling and asking for things. I don't know, like say like stuff or project and stuff. I wouldn't like asking for anything, and they didn't like that. And
they didn't like that you didn't ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
It's hard.
And it's almost, if you understand, if you were in foster care since you were in third grade, you know, so you were... It might have been permanent for them, and this isn't a foster to adoption, and they want their family. But for you, it was just another family, and who knows if you're going to bounce around again or, you know.
Yeah.
So it's common with kids who grow up in the foster system to... not ask because their needs weren't met when they were young, so, you know.
Yeah, at first my siblings were, like, not supportive of it. But when they saw that I didn't really care, they were like, okay. And they had to get used to it, and now they are. My parents have met my siblings. So I think it's getting better now.
How would you say that that all the things that you went through, the trauma or your experiences, negative experiences, or... How would you say they're linked to or have affected you, the outcome of you being homeless, like your homelessness now?
I still struggle with it, obviously. I was taking medication for a little bit.
For what?
Depression, anxiety, and PTSD.
Okay.
I stopped taking the medication because it was making me, like, it was making me feel like somebody else, not like myself. Psychiatrist that I had tried to make me keep taking it, so I stopped going to him. And since I've like stopped doing that, I feel better. I guess the trauma has like kind of like built me up to like expect the worst, and when the worst doesn't happen, I see it as a win, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Not to have high. I don't. It sounds negative, but it's like not to have high expectations of things, and like and.
So it's difficult for you to set goals.
Definitely, yeah, it is.
So that's how it's all linked together. So it's because of your experiences.
If you could, like, reach back to yourself, right, when all of this started happening, like, what would you have wished for yourself, and what would you have told yourself in that situation to be able to help you through?
I would have, because when I was younger, they asked me if I wanted to get adopted. I would have gotten adopted sooner, I think. To have a better support system, to kind of help with everything that I went through, like a little more. And I feel like if that was a thing, then I would have maybe like had better tools and a better mentality to like be successful and stuff like that. I don't know.
Did you resist being adopted?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they asked you, they gave you a choice?
Mm-hmm. What age did they ask you?
I think it was 12 or 13.
Oh, well, from the beginning. Well, from the moment your parents lost parental rights.
Yeah.
So what made you resist?
Because my siblings told me not to.
Were any of them adopted?
Mm-mm.
Like, if you could imagine for yourself, like a great next 5 years, what would that be?
I don't know. School. I would still be in school. I think that's what I'm going to really focus on, school. I can't really think that far. If I think that far, I'm just going to be like, oh, okay, I'm going to get there. But then I'm not going to focus on the now. I don't know if that makes sense. But, I always have, like, obviously, because I was in the foster care system, I want to tie that in. And, like, that's where my interest in, like, social sciences and like sociology and stuff like that comes in.
So it's sociology.
I don't want to be a social worker. I know that. all the social workers I ever had were horrible.
Sociology is the study of why people behave the way they do and how that results in
behavior. Behavior.
Behavior. And so that's what interests you, to study behavior?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. It's like why people act like the way they do. Yeah, and like it's that'd be cool.
You, when we were on the drive over here, mm-hmm. you mentioned that you've always been interested, and you're interested in writing, creative writing. Yeah. You said,
What kind of creative writing?
I was waiting for you to see if you mentioned this.
So like usually, like when I was like in a dark place, I would just write like these dark things, like that was going on in my head, how I felt. But that's like the example, like one of my personal goals that I like know that I've known for a while is that I do want to write a book, not like about my experience or anything, but more of like a fantastical book, I guess, like a fiction book.
Yeah, the freedom, right? The freedom of fantasy. So that's great, because that's what you can do with this. You can write a story, and we can record that. The stories that you create in your head, what kind of stories are they? Like, give me an example, like, if you want to share one.
I don't know, like, more of, like, just, like, I was thinking more of, like, you know, Harry Potter.
Yeah, like you can totally do that. What's one of your storylines?
One of my storylines is about these kids that were all born the same day, same time, and, it turns out, like, when they reach a certain age, they developed, I don't know what to call it yet, but, like, they developed something that pretty much bound them together. So they were drawn to each other. They didn't live near each other, but quantum relativity kind of, like, brought them together.
All right. Okay. So I think this is awesome. If you can write that story, right, you can write it out.
Yeah.
I'll match you up with a mentor who's, like, a writer. Oh, that would be awesome, and that's completely different than anything that anybody else is doing right now.
Yeah.
So that would
I have all my notes for that story still, because when I was in the Hollywood shelter, I was, like, really going at it. I was researching stuff and all that, yeah.
The secret life of Daniel here.
Wow.
You have all this, you're like,
oh, my God,
here.
I can see a Netflix series on this already.
And the whole time he's like, I got nothing. No, I'm good. Well, yeah, actually, I have this whole entire story that I've written.
It's 500 pages long.
That's great. And then, seriously, we'll you think about how you know, after you work with your mentor and you do all that stuff and you get it together, think about how you want it performed. Either you can narrate it, we can get, like, a professional narrator to do it if you want.
Yeah.
Like, think about it. Because that'll cool. be really fun, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That does sound really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Let's something. Do it.
Yeah. All right.
I agree.
Is there anything you wanna you ever wanted to get off your chest or to say, or if you want people to know about homeless youth? If you want anyone that you could help change their mind about how they think about homeless youth?
Oh, man. At least for me, it was that I mean, I did look raggedy. I looked like filthy and stuff like that. I was scared of people more than they were scared of me. I would always like go away from them. I don't know. We're not bad. We're not bad. Mm-hmm. We're just lost.
You were just, there's such sweetness just emanating from you. You're just such a, I can tell you're just such a good person.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, all right. So now we have our work cut out. And that's great. And if there's anything else, do you want to share anything else? Like, what would you say to somebody that was in the situation that you found yourself in when you first were out there?
There is definitely help. They're there to help you. They're not going to judge you. You just got to take the first step to contact them, and they got you.
Yeah. When you say them, who do you mean?
I mean, just, I don't like this place, like the drop-in center, DMH. There's just so many shelters out there.
But there is help.
There is help.
Take the help, you mean. Yeah.
You just gotta want it.
I'm glad you wanted it.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're here. I'm so happy to meet you. All right. So then let's do that. I think that's a really clear-cut mission for you, Daniel. That's exciting.
Thank you.
Wow.
I'm so happy to report that Daniel is now working on his creative fiction episode with Gabe Evans, producer at AFV. Yeah, that's America's Funniest Home Videos. And Vin DeBona Productions. I can't wait to hear what they come up with. If you're experiencing homelessness or are dancing on the edge, contact the DIC. No judgments. They'll help you. There are links to their services in our description. The Tay are so impressive. Anyone could fold under what they bear. Just give up, and it would be understandable. But if there is one aspect, one single story about our Tay in this program, it is the will to blossom. Our theme song is True by Haunted Horses NYC, whom you can also find on Spotify. Thanks for listening.